And Since We've No Place to Go by Katie Falls, read by Cookie Mom 6067. It will always bother Nikki a little that neither he nor Joe remember how they first met. Facebook, Joe will explain with a faint grimace and wave of the hand, back before we knew it was evil. They knew they attended the same university and had mutual friends in common. That was enough to explain it in those relatively early days of social media, when the platform was primarily used by college students. At least in Nikki's experience, you just kind of friended anyone on campus you knew in passing. Maybe they'd had a class together, or been at the same party one night. He'll never be able to trace the originating event. But some years later, when Nikki has to relocate for a new job, a stressful and fruitless week of flat hunting leads him to post on his socials asking if anyone knows anyone in London who needs a flatmate. Joe happens to see it, coincidentally now lives in the same city, and does in fact have a friend in a similar position, so he reaches out. And that's how Nikki and Quinn become flatmates. Quinn is clever and ruthless and glamorous, with an unexpectedly sweet strain of romanticism beneath her sharp-edged exterior, and Nikki absolutely adores her. They bond via philosophical debates at 2 a.m, trashy rom-coms, and increasingly competitive games of darts at their local pub. She likes to host lavish dinner parties every month, and he lets her sweet-talk him into doing most of the cooking, not to mention the cleanup afterward. In exchange, she handles the bulk of the housework when he's on deadline and plays wingwoman very effectively whenever she manages to drag him out clubbing. So about 16 months into their cohabitation slash friendship, he agrees without hesitation when she asks him to be her fake boyfriend for Christmas. "I'm the only single woman of marriageable age in my entire extended family," she explains in dire tones. "My aunties are definitely ganging up on me, and they refuse to hear the whole lesbian thing. Please, please help me shut them up just for this one holiday. You'll get a free trip to some posh hunting lodge near Edinburgh out of it." Nikki lifts an eyebrow. "I thought most of your family were here in London." "They are. But Auntie Lynn's rich white husband has, like, an estate up there or something." Quinn sighs. "I'll bet she's procured a veritable army of rugged Scotsmen to matchmake me with. I'll give you first crack at any of the gay ones, if that helps." "Well," Nikki says, laughing, "how could I possibly say no to that?" As it turns out, there is no army of rugged Scotsmen, though apparently Auntie Lynn's rich white husband does have an unattached 30-something nephew of his own, so Quinn was right to be suspicious. Unfortunately for the potential suitor, and all of Quinn's matchmaking aunties, the lodge also comes with a stable of thoroughbred horses and its stable master, who happens to be a rugged lesbian named Andy, who is also precisely Quinn's type. So on the morning of Christmas Eve, she and Quinn abscond together, presumably to go raise horses in the Highlands or something. It's a wild ride. Nikki wishes them both well. But it does leave him in a somewhat uncomfortable situation with the rest of Quinn's extended family, as the supposedly jilted ex-boyfriend. So while Auntie Lynn tells him he's welcome to stay for Christmas as planned, he takes her alternate offer of a ride to Edinburgh instead, praying he'll make the last train back to London before everything shuts down. It starts to snow around when he leaves the lodge, but he doesn't pay it much mind, beyond the offhand thought that it will make a very romantic holiday for Quinn and Andy. He does notice that the wind has picked up as he makes his way from the car to the sprawling train station and tugs his scarf more firmly up around his face. But then he's in the station trying to figure out which platform he needs and whether he has time to grab a sandwich before the 5-hour train ride, so the weather outside fades into irrelevance. Once aboard, he does vaguely notice that the snow is coming down steadily now, but it's already getting dark at 3:30 in the afternoon because it's fucking Scotland in December, so it's not like he can see much out the train windows anyway. Instead, he settles in with his book and winds up nodding off shortly after leaving the city. He hasn't gotten much sleep over the past couple of nights, what with Quinn's romantic shenanigans, and the rhythmic motion of the train over the tracks is very soothing. So it's an unpleasant surprise when he wakes from his impromptu nap to an announcement that due to the inclement weather and hazardous levels of ice on the tracks, the train will be making its final stop at the nearest local station in the middle of nowhere, Yorkshire. Not that Nicky has anything against Yorkshire. He's never really given any thought to Yorkshire one way or the other, but apparently he's now going to be stuck here overnight in a blizzard on Christmas Eve. Nothing about this holiday has gone as expected. The little station is impressively chaotic in the wake of the canceled trains. Nicky takes one look at the queue leading to the lone ticket agent and knows there's no chance of resolution this evening. And the last thing he wants is to make that poor clerk's night any worse. From the way people are shouting at her, it's clear she's being held personally responsible for both the weather and National Rail's ticketing policies. "Oh, what fresh hell is this?" someone says, probably more loudly than they realize, right at Nicky's shoulder. Nicky turns sympathetically to see Joe. Yes, that is, in fact, Joe Alcazani standing in front of him, wearing an overstuffed backpack and a nice wool jacket that's probably not warm enough for this weather, his dark curls damp with melting snow, a stricken expression on his face. He looks about as happy as a wet cat. He blinks at Nicky in confusion, face clearing only fractionally in recognition. "Nicky? What on earth are you doing here?" "I could ask the same of you," Nicky says. "But more importantly, I hope you are not trying to catch a train." Joe's face visibly falls further. "I was, but everything is canceled because of the snow." Nicky reaches out unthinkingly to brush a particularly large clump of it off Joe's shoulder. An odd intimacy, he realizes a moment later, drawing back. But Joe looks so bedraggled and miserable that Nicky kind of wants to bundle him up in a blanket or something. He clears his throat, shaking the errant thought away. "I am sorry to be the bearer of bad news." "Fuck," Joe says with feeling. "I really need to not be here right now." He shakes his head. Little droplets of cold water land on Nicky's cheek, and he takes a half step back. "Shit, sorry. You're stuck in the same mess, aren't you?" Nicky nods, shifting his bag more comfortably over his shoulder. "Yeah, I was on the train from Edinburgh, but it looks like I'm not getting any further until the weather clears." "Edinburgh? Oh, right, Quinn told me about her family holiday. You went with her?" Quinn and Joe are fairly close. Nicky's not surprised she mentioned it to him. That's how he knows Joe at all these days. He's a regular attendee of Quinn's dinner parties and joins them out on the town when the mood strikes. And well, if Nicky's being perfectly honest with himself, he's harbored a low-key crush on Joe ever since they reconnected in London, which he mostly tries to ignore. Joe has a long-standing on-again, off-again boyfriend, and Nicky has no interest in getting muddled up in that. But that's beside the point. "Yes, that's right," Nicky says. He gives Joe a wry smile. "Our trip ended rather unexpectedly and sooner than planned, so I headed home early, but not early enough, as it turns out." Joe's mouth twists. That seems to be going around. The unexpected ending to the holiday, that is. "Are you sure there are no trains back to London tonight?" Nicky gestures at the impossible queue. "You're welcome to argue with the ticket agent along with everyone else, but I doubt you'll get a better answer." "Fuck." Joe's shoulders slump and he scrubs a hand across his face, looking lost. "Sorry. I know you're trapped here, too." "On the plus side, at least you seem to know where we are," Nicky points out. "So you have the advantage of me there. And while I'm very sorry that you are in this situation, too, I have to admit, it's good to see a familiar face here." He tilts his head, trying to catch Joe's eyes, and offers a tentative smile once Joe does look back up at him. "Better than being alone in it, I hope." If Joe's answering smile is faint, at least it's a start. "Maybe. Yeah. Can we start this whole interaction over, please?" at Nikki's laugh and nod, he takes a deep breath and visibly pulls himself together. Still not quite his usual self, but a much better approximation of it. Thanks. Okay. Hi, Nikki. It's shit to be here, but I really am glad to see you. Likewise, Nikki says, clapping him companionably on the shoulder. So, do you know anywhere nearby we could comfortably wait out this storm? And maybe drink until we both forget how much we don't want to be here? Joe snorts, his eyes creasing into the most genuine smile Nikki's seen so far. You know what? That's the best idea I've heard all week. I know just the place. And then the horse literally bit him in the ass on his way out. Joe laughs harder than Nikki's ridiculous story deserves. They're about two drinks into the evening, which also helps. You've got to be kidding. Hand to God, that's what happened, Nikki says, grinning. Though I do not blame you for doubting me. If I hadn't been there, I would not believe it either. And he clearly had those horses well trained on nonverbal commands. And then she and Quinn just ran off together. Wasn't that Andy's job? Nikki shrugs and takes another sip of his drink. I don't think Andy particularly cared for her work there. Well, she did clearly care for the horses, but not her employers. So it was not much of a loss for her. And I should think Quinn is worth a minor inconvenience of employment. She is at that, Joe says fondly. Well, if you like Andy so much after such a short time, then I hope it works out for them. And if not, at least it will always make a good story. Nikki rests his chin on his hand, regarding Joe curiously. You trust my judgment, then? Of course, Joe says at once. I mean, I realize we don't know each other that well, but I do know Quinn, and living with you has been good for her. She can be impulsive, capricious sometimes. You seem to study her. Nikki raises an eyebrow. Don't forget, this all started because I indulged her ridiculous fake boyfriend scheme. Joe shakes his head, but he's smiling. See, that's why you're the perfect friend for someone like Quinn. You know when to go along with her madness, so that you can be there to help rein it in if it goes too far. So if you think running off with this Andy person was good for her... He shrugs, palms open. I believe you. Warmth suffuses Nikki's chest unexpectedly at his sincerity. He takes another swallow of his drink, hoping the flush he can feel rising to his cheeks will be written off to the overheated room. Or the alcohol. They've landed in a pub not far from the train station. It's a bit run down, but clean and warm and blessedly still open, despite it being Christmas Eve. It's likely to do good business tonight, with all the other stranded travelers, too. They're all definitely stuck in town for the night, maybe longer, depending on how long this storm lasts. Well, wherever Quinn and Andy ran off to, I hope they got there before this storm hit, Nikki says, which reminds me, not that I'm in a hurry to head back outside, but I should probably sort out where I'm going to spend the night. This place will have to shut down eventually, and I'd rather not sleep on a bench in the station. Good point, Joe says, mouth twisting. Though I should warn you, there's not much around here. Nikki considers him. Then figures he might as well ask, where were you staying? I know you are trying to leave today, so I'd understand if it's not an option anymore. No, it's a fair question, just... Joe grimaces, scratching the back of his neck. You haven't really asked how I wound up here tonight. And I won't, if you don't want to talk about it, Nikki says carefully. You seemed upset at the station. But it's really none of my business. I'm sorry if I made you uncomfortable. Joe sighs. Believe me, it's not you. It's just kind of embarrassing. He stares down into his mostly empty glass. This is the village where Lycan grew up. Lycan is Joe's sometimes boyfriend. Nikki's met him a few times and generally enjoys his company, though he wouldn't say he knows him well. But he's starting to suspect where this story is going. Okay, so you came here with him? His family is kind of low-key homophobic. He hasn't been home for Christmas in years, But his mom insisted, so he invited me along to, like, shove it in their faces, I guess. Prove how much happier he was with his life in London. Joe shrugs, still not quite meeting Nikki's eyes. We're not really, I mean, Lycan's a lot of fun, but he's not. We don't. I wouldn't normally go home for Christmas with him, you know? If something twists awkwardly behind Nikki's ribcage, a sort of tentative hope, he dismisses it as irrelevant and inappropriate. Had you ever met his parents before? No, Joe says. And this isn't really how I would have wanted to meet them if we'd ever gotten to that point in our relationship, but he said it was important to him, and he clearly needed the moral support, so I agreed. It was kind of a last-minute ask, though, and I couldn't get the full time off work. He came up last weekend, and he was really miffed that I couldn't join him from the start. Nikki shakes his head, bemused. You are doing him a big favor, and not everyone has a flexible job. I'm sure he understood that. I know, he was just stressed and snippy about it, Joe says tiredly, but like, I don't even celebrate Christmas, you know? I try to save up my vacation time to visit family for our own holidays. It's enough of a hassle to get my boss to even recognize I'd, let alone. He cuts himself off and gives Nikki a rueful smile. Sorry, you really didn't ask me to dump all this on you. Anyway, long story short, I finally got here yesterday, only to discover that Lycan didn't need me for his big gay Christmas after all. Oh no, Nikki winces. You mean? Turns out the guy who runs the only B&B in town is queer, single, and extremely fit. Joe sighs. Lycan booked us a room there so that he could escape his family as needed, and well, suffice to say, he's not actually using the bed we paid for. Which means I do, technically, have a place to sleep tonight, but I'd really rather not go back there. I am so sorry, Nikki says and means it. That was hurtful of him, even if he did not intend it to be. He put you in a very uncomfortable situation. Joe shrugs, giving him a self-deprecating smile. Eh, no more uncomfortable than Quinn leaving you stranded with her entire extended family. I've met some of her aunties, that's no joke. But I was not actually dumped by a partner I cared about, Nikki says gently. You're allowed to feel upset, Joe, or pissed off, or sad, or whatever it is you're feeling right now. Embarrassed, mostly, Joe admits. And hurt, yeah, a bit. But also relieved, I think, that at least I know it's really over this time. He props his head up on both hands, elbows resting on the table, meeting Nikki's eyes with an expression Nikki can't quite read. Is that awful of me? Of course not. Or would you rather be brokenhearted? Joe huffs out a laugh. If Lycan was going to break my heart, it would have happened long before now, but no, that's never what it was between us. I think I used to want it to be. He's a fun person to be with, and his heart's in the right place. Well, most of the time. And look, obviously he's a very beautiful man. He exchanges a wry look with Nikki, who returns it. There's no denying that Lycan is stunningly attractive. But I think we were always better off just friends. Then I hope you will find a way to be friends again eventually, if that's what you want. Maybe, I don't know. Joe tilts his head to one side, his expression searching. How are you so easy to talk to? Nikki shrugs, trying to ignore the heat fizzing pleasantly to his fingertips at that. Ah, I think you just needed to see a friendly face tonight. Besides, he gestures to their empty glasses, in vino veritas and all that. Joe waves that off with a snort. No, no. Maybe a little, but no. Thank you for listening, Nikki. Seriously, it means a lot. There's such sincerity in his lovely brown eyes. Nikki finds himself caught there, transfixed. In truth, he thinks he could easily listen to Joe talk for hours. He has such a beautifully expressive face. Even tonight, in his uncharacteristic frustration and unhappiness, he's just so animated when he speaks. I'm glad I could be here to help, Nikki says softly. Me too. Joe just looks at him for a moment more, like maybe he has something more to say, but then he shakes his head as if to clear it. Sorry, I completely forgot. We need to figure out where we're sleeping tonight, don't we? His eyes widen. Not that we need to, like, not sleeping together. I just mean... Joe is very, very cute when he's flustered, which Nikki manages not to inform him aloud. He grins instead, waving a dismissive hand. Don't worry, I know what you meant. It will be cheaper to share a room, though, if you're willing, assuming we can find one. Yeah, of course, Joe says, already fiddling with his phone. There has to be some kind of chain hotel nearby. Let me see. Nikki starts Googling around himself, and for a couple of minutes, they sit quietly, absorbed in the search. But they quickly reach the same conclusion. Well, Nikki says, wrinkling his nose, unless we can somehow get a taxi to take us all the way to York. In this storm? Yeah, right. Joe grimaces down at his phone. I know hotels jack up the prices around the holidays already, but this is fucking criminal. Supply and demand, Nikki says dryly. When you're the only game in town. Joe groans and puts his head down in his hands. So it's either back to Lycan's new boyfriend's B&B or we're sleeping in the train station. Nikki's glad that the table is between them, or it would be very hard to resist the urge to tug Joe into his arms right now. I can pay for the last room at the hotel, if you really don't want to go back there. But we'll have to make that decision right now before it's gone, or they raise the prices even higher. Oh, hell no, Joe says at once, raising his head again. I'm not letting you fork over that much money for a shitty hotel room just because I'm embarrassed about running into my ex, who's not really an ex. That would imply we were... He trails off. You were, though, Nikki murmurs. Maybe not quite like that, but still, you were. And it's okay that it hurts now. Joe stares at him. How are you real? No, never mind. Please forget I said that. So, he straightens, rubbing the back of his neck and looking away. Okay, the B&B it is. Let me just, text Lycan real quick and make sure I can still use the room. While he does, frowning down at his phone, Nikki orders them another round of drinks. He has the feeling they'll need it. The pub shuts down relatively early that night in deference to the holiday, which is honestly just as well. Nikki's a little unsteady on his feet, and Joe's face looks more flushed than usual, but both of them are still comfortably in the realm of tipsy rather than drunk. The hearty pub fare they'd eaten for dinner definitely helps soak up some of the alcohol, which is good because now they've got to somehow navigate themselves and their luggage, though fortunately they've only got one bag each, through a very snowy night to Lycan's new boyfriend's B&B. I think the worst is over, Nikki says optimistically, as they brace themselves at the pub doorway. The wind has mostly died down, and he could actually see the road. Well, the general shape of it, at least. That's something. Joe gives him a dour look. It's still freezing and snowing. Well, it won't get any warmer the longer we stand here. Come on, I believe in us. He settles his duffel bag firmly over his shoulder, takes a deep breath, and steps out into it. The cold slaps him across the face, and the snow is roughly ankle deep on the unshoveled sidewalk. He tugs his scarf up to his nose, already blinking snowflakes out of his eyelashes. On the plus side, this should sober him up nicely. He's going to cling to that. I hate everything, Joe moans, but he's trudging forward, and that's good enough for now. Joe leads the way since he's the one who actually knows where they're going. According to him, it's only about a 10-minute walk from the train station to the B&B, and while the pub wasn't quite on the way, it wasn't too far out of it either. They had tried getting a taxi first, but that was a lost cause. At least the road is well lit, and the snow falls only lightly now. They're not in any danger of getting lost in it or of freezing to death in the next 10 minutes. Although, Joe, don't you have a hat? Or a scarf, at least? Joe glares balefully at him through the still falling snow. Not with me, obviously. Ridiculous, man. Here. Nikki unwinds his own scarf and proffers it. When Joe just blinks at it, he tisks and drapes it loosely around Joe's bare neck. You can use it to cover your head as well. I recommend that, even if it feels silly. You lose most of your body heat through your head, you know, and you don't want to fall ill. After a moment's hesitation, Joe gives in and brushes the worst of the snow off his hair before tugging the scarf up as instructed. Nicky tugs up the collar of his own coat, missing the warmth a little, but he is wearing a woolen beanie like any sensible person would in the middle of winter, so he's fine. Besides, Joe looks unfairly adorable with the scarf wound around his head like a babushka, well worth the trade-off. In my defense, Joe says, hugging himself as they continue plodding onward, I didn't know there was a storm forecast when I packed for this little excursion, and I expected to spend most of it in Lycan's parents' house, not traipsing about through the snow. It's still winter in Yorkshire. I'm from Tunis, Joe protests. How often do you really think we get snow? Nicky laughs, not without sympathy. And you lived in the UK for how many years now? Oh, don't pretend you like it any better. You're a child of the Mediterranean, too. Yes, Nicky says with a smile, which is why I invested in proper cold weather gear as soon as I moved north. I would not face the elements in what passes for a winter coat in Genoa. Joe actually pouts at him, which is completely ridiculous. It also unfortunately draws Nicky's attention to how full and soft his lips look. He misses his footing on the icy pavement, distracted, and maybe still slightly inebriated, and has to grab at Joe's arm to keep his balance. See, Joe says, face very close to his, you're not any better at this. Nicky scoffs and rolls his eyes, but he also does not bother letting go of Joe as they keep walking. And Joe doesn't seem to mind, either. If anything, he links his arm more firmly with Nicky's, and his solid warmth against Nicky's side is very welcome. It takes them rather more than 10 minutes to reach the inn, what with all the snow. Nicky encourages Joe to keep talking throughout as a distraction from the increasingly unpleasant cold and wet. And if Joe's working himself up into a strop, at least it'll warm him up a bit. Eventually, he runs out of different ways to complain about the weather and starts venting about the unceremonious end of his relationship. You know what the worst part of it is? Lycan really thinks he's in love with this guy. Joe shakes his head vehemently, dislodging a small flurry of snowflakes. Like, he's talking about maybe moving back here and making a proper go of it with someone he met under a stray sprig of mistletoe, like, 5 days ago. Who even does that? It sounds like one of those ridiculous Hallmark movies, Nicky agrees. Quinn loves to hate watch those every December. But then I suppose she wound up stumbling into her own, didn't she? At least it's in character for Quinn, that kind of mad, impulsive ridiculousness. Lycan, though. Joe shrugs, his shoulder bumping up against Nicky's. He's never been one for romance. He always made that very clear to me, which was fine, I thought. At least he was upfront about it. I knew what I was getting into with him and what he would and would not be able to offer me. But that's what sucks, you know? That I was so willing to take what I could get from him and never ask for anything more when apparently this whole time he did have the capacity for real romantic love, but just not with me. Joe kicks mutinously at the snow, dogging his boots, which are definitely more stylish than functional in this weather. I didn't even feel that way for him myself. Why should I even care? Oh my God. Joe stops dead in his tracks, and Nicky nearly trips over his own feet again, stopping with him. When Joe looks over at him, his eyes are wide with horror. What? Nicky asks, concerned. What is it? What's wrong? Nicky. I'm the soulless big city Christmas-hating ex-boyfriend in Lycan's Hallmark movie, aren't I? Nicky stares at him, then bursts out laughing. He can't help himself. Madre de Dio, Joe, you are. Oh, no. Stop laughing, Joe protests, though he's starting to giggle helplessly himself. No, it's not funny. I can't be the evil ex, Nicky. It's just wrong. It's very, very, very wrong, Nicky agrees. Between truly embarrassing snort giggles, poor Joe, you just need to accept the true meaning of Christmas into your heart. I'm Muslim. Love is the reason for the season, Joe. Love is the only thing keeping me from shoving you into a snowdrift right now, asshole. Nikki gives him a wet, smacking kiss on his cold cheek. And I appreciate it so much, Tesoro. Joe swats at him, but he's grinning and looking more himself than he has all night. Fuck right off. Nikki grins right back, and for a few blissful moments, he doesn't notice the cold at all. Lycan's new boyfriend's B&B, when they finally reach it, feels like a relic from a different era. For starters, it's an actual traditional bed and breakfast inn, not an Airbnb or the like. The house itself looks like it was built sometime in the Victorian era, and the decor likely hasn't been updated since. He recently inherited the place from his grandmother, I think, Joe says, looking around the front hall in polite distaste. I don't think he's had the chance to redecorate yet. Or maybe he just really likes chintz, Nikki says dryly. They were greeted by a sullen teenage girl, likely a sister or niece of the new owner, who grudgingly hunts down Joe's room key while they slowly defrost in the chilly foyer. She doesn't seem to care that they're making puddles on the hardwood floor, just shoves the key in their general direction, mutters something about breakfast starting at 8, and disappears down the hallway without so much as a happy Christmas. Nikki lifts an eyebrow at Joe, who shrugs. I'm just glad it wasn't the boyfriend here to meet us. The room's upstairs. It's a nice enough place, Nikki thinks. On the drafty side, for sure, but big old houses like this are hard to heat. Everything might be a few decades or centuries out of fashion, but it all looks well-maintained, brightly lit, and clean. There are definitely worse places to be stuck overnight. Once they find their room and close the door firmly behind them, Nikki wastes no time in divesting himself of his sopping outerwear, trying not to bring too much of the wet into the room itself. There are a few hooks on the back of the door, and he opts to hang his wet coat there rather than ruin the ancient wardrobe with puddles of melting snow. Joe is still dripping pathetically in the middle of the ugly paisley rug. He managed to yank off his boots, at least, but still hasn't taken off his wet coat. His arms are wrapped tightly around himself as he shivers, and the damp is visibly seeping into his socks. Fuck, it's cold. Nikki can't help but melt a little himself at the sight. Oh, poverino, come here, he says, stepping in and tugging at Joe's hands. It will be better with that coat off, I promise. And you're just hugging the cold in now. Joe loosens up reluctantly, shrugging the sodden wool off his shoulders, letting Nikki help when his own icy fingers fumble with the stubborn buttons at the front. How are your hands so warm? You were out in that blizzard with me. I have gloves, Nikki points out, exasperation mingling with amusement. Why don't you? I own gloves, obviously. I think they're in my bag somewhere. Ah, yes, where they are so very helpful to you. Nikki gently unwinds his own scarf from Joe's head as well, then hangs Joe's coat beside his own on the back of the door where it can drip in peace. Now, I do realize how this sounds, but seriously, you should get out of those wet clothes. Nikki, Joe says, very close behind him, a strained tone to his voice. And when he turns back around, he takes Nikki's face in his very cold hands and kisses him. Joe's lips are cold too, but they warm up quickly when Nikki kisses him back. And his mouth, oh, it's so perfectly hot against Nikki's. And Nikki lets out a soft, hungry noise and kisses him and kisses him. Heat fizzes its way down his spine, pooling molten in his belly. And without quite intending it, he has Joe pressed up against the nearest wall, never breaking their kiss. This is such a bad idea. Nikki couldn't stop kissing Joe right now if his life depended on it, though. Joe keeps one palm firm on Nikki's cheek, holding him in place, while his other hand roams greedily across Nikki's shoulders, down along his back, presses firmly against his ass. If Nikki whimpers a little at that, Joe swallows the sound from his mouth before it can escape. All the low-grade arousal he's been feeling all evening. Every time his gaze lingered on Joe's mouth or their hands brushed, or he caught Joe looking in a way he hadn't let himself put words to, has suddenly become a fever, a storm, a supernova. He's nearly shaking with it just from this. It would almost be embarrassing if Joe weren't so clearly right here with him. Joe cups the back of Nikki's head, fingers tangling in Nikki's hair, tugging gently. It feels so good. Nikki actually has to draw back for breath, pressing his forehead to Joe's. Okay, Joe asks hoarsely. Very. Nikki breathes. You? God, yes. Joe ducks back in to suck a kiss along the underside of Nikki's jaw. He scratches across Nikki's scalp again, and Nikki can feel him smile against his neck at the inadvertent sound he makes in response. Somehow they manage to stagger their way over to the bed, hardly willing to let go long enough to undress each other properly. Socks, in particular, are always ungraceful to remove, especially when wet. Then Joe's damp jeans cling to his thighs, and he gets stuck trying to tug them down. Muttering curses against Nikki's mouth until laughing, Nikki just pushes him back to sit on the edge of the bed and steps in to assist. Of course, he gets distracted partway through, dropping to his knees, and winds up mouthing at the soft skin of Joe's inner thigh while Joe gasps and writhes above him, the dratted jeans still tangled around his ankles. Nikki, Nikki, please, Joe all but whines, tugging at Nikki's shoulders. You're too far away. I need to feel you. Nikki presses one last open-mouthed kiss against the damp fabric of Joe's underwear, and Joe's hips twitch violently once, thrillingly. Nikki. All right, Nikki says, and clambers up onto the bed to join him, tugging his shirt up over his head as he goes. The bed, a lovely old four-poster, creaks faintly beneath their combined weight, and the mattress has a bit of a squeak to it. He couldn't care less. Joe flails awkwardly beside him, kicking his jeans the rest of the way off. Nikki belatedly realizes, and then wraps both arms around Nikki's waist, practically dragging Nikki on top of him. His hands aren't quite so cold as they were earlier, but they're still startlingly cool against the bare skin of Nikki's back, and he shivers reflexively. Warm us up then, Joe says, voice low and hoarse, and Nikki has no choice but to comply. They should talk about this, he does think distantly, as he slots his leg between Joe's, kissing him soundly. But Joe feels so good beneath him. The long, lean lines of his body, the warm scent of his skin, the soft scrape of his beard against Nikki's face, his neck, his collarbone. It's all an urgent blur of sensation, and Nikki loses himself to it willingly. He can't stop touching Joe, all over, tracing patterns with his fingertips that he then has to follow with his mouth, kissing every inch of him he can reach. The world narrows to just this room, this bed, Joe eager and pliant against him. They do warm up fairly quickly, as it turns out, until they're panting against each other's lips, sweat slick, rocking inelegantly together. Condoms, Nikki manages to gasp out at one point. He has enough common sense for that, at least, even now. He's pretty sure he has a couple in his bag, somewhere, but it's frankly unthinkable that he would stop touching Joe for long enough to hunt them down. Or maybe... Joe moans, hips rolling up against his thighs. Or just your hand, honestly. Oh, fuck yes, just like that. Don't you dare stop. Nikki kisses him hard and sloppy, their lips dragging together. You don't know how long I've wanted this. Yeah, Joe says, and there's something oddly vulnerable in his tone beneath the heat. Nikki stills, drawing back enough to look into his eyes properly. Yes, Joe, you are incredibly beautiful. I am so, so attracted to you. Everything about you. You need to know this. Joe surges up to kiss him again, deeply, framing his face with both hands. They lose long minutes after that, just kissing, the need for that simple point of connection overwhelming everything else. Of course, it does eventually shift back to a different sort of urgency, and soon enough Nikki is bucking frantically against the solid line of Joe's thigh, working a hand between them. They finish each other off just like that, simple and straightforward and gloriously messy, crying out inarticulately into each other's mouths. Afterward, They just lie together in a tangled heap, breathing heavily, the sweat cooling rapidly on their skin. When he feels Joe start to shiver against him, Nikki gently maneuvers them both until they're actually under the quilted coverlet. Wet spot be damned. Then he realizes how uncomfortably sticky they'll soon become and hauls himself out of bed with a groan. There's a tiny ensuite attached to the room, and he grabs the nearest cloth to hand, a small towel, and runs it under the taps, cleaning himself quickly and then bringing the damp towel back to bed so that Joe can do the same. "Thanks," Joe says sleepily, tossing the towel aside once he's done. "Get back in here. This house is frigid." "It's not that bad," Nikki says. But he flicks off the light switch by the door and then fumbles his way back under the covers with alacrity. Joe immediately curls into him, winding an arm around Nikki's waist and tugging him close. It eases something uncertain in Nikki's chest. He presses a kiss to Joe's forehead and can just barely make out Joe's smile through the darkness. "I forgot to warn you," Joe murmurs. "There's only one bed. We'll have to share." Nikki laughs quietly and kisses him again, lingering. "We'll manage somehow." He jolts awake to an insistent, unfamiliar ringtone. When flailing in the general direction of a bedside table yields no results, his body moves on autopilot, propelling him out of the bed in search of the source of the noise, needing to make it stop. Awareness filters in slowly as he goes. Yes, he vaguely recognizes this bedroom, though did he truly appreciate the awfulness of the paisley rug last night? He nearly trips over a discarded pair of jeans. His or Joe's? Could be either. Just as he traces the sound to the pocket of Joe's coat and fishes it out, of course it finally stops ringing. Nikki just stands there for a long minute, staring blankly down at the mobile in his hand, not really seeing it, taking stock. The exposed hardwood floor here by the door is cold beneath his bare feet. His mouth feels like cotton, and his calf muscles ache with the memory of the long slog through the snow. His head throbs faintly in the dull, nausea-tinged headache of a hangover. Not too bad as these things go, but still, his body's reminder that he's no longer in his 20s. Last night. He had sex with Joe last night. It's not that he'd forgotten. Not in the slightest. But the full reality of the situation is just now starting to sink in. Joe's mobile chimes in his hand with an incoming text, breaking Nikki out of his reverie. He shakes his head and retrieves his own phone from his coat since he's already here, then retreats hastily back to the warmth and comfort of the bed. Joe is sitting up with a groan, scrubbing a hand across his face. His hair is a tousled mess that leaves no question about what they'd been up to together. Nikki experiences a vivid, visceral sense memory of sinking his fingers into those curls as Joe mouthed at his chest, and he's grateful that the room is chilly enough to explain away his full-body shiver.
"Nikki?"
Joe's voice is low and hoarse with sleep. Nikki shivers again and scrambles under the coverlet.
"Your mobile was going off," he says by way of explanation, handing it over. "I wasn't sure if it was important."
Joe glances down at it and rolls his eyes. "Really, really not. My sister wants to know how my holiday with Lycan is going." Nikki winces, drawing back. Well, good morning." "No such thing," Joe grumbles. He tosses the phone onto his bedside table and burrows back into the sheets, covering his head with a pillow. It's not the most auspicious start to a morning after, Nikki thinks ruefully, his stomach sinking a little. But then he knows Joe is not a morning person, having heard him argue with Quinn about what constitutes an appropriate time for brunch on multiple occasions, so Nikki probably shouldn't read too much into it. His nerves are allayed somewhat when Joe snakes an arm around his waist, tugging gently. "Come back here," Joe says. Or, well, that's what it sounds like he says, muffled by the pillow. "What time is it anyway?" Nikki looks at his own mobile to check and notices a number of missed alerts of his own. "Just past 10, he says, scrolling through them. "Shit." Joe lifts the pillow off his face, squinting up at him. "What's wrong?" "Not wrong," Nikki says quickly. "Just text alert from National Rail. The good news is limited train service has been restored."
Joe snorts. A Christmas miracle. Nikki gives him a distracted smile. No kidding. But the next train to London leaves in 40 minutes. And if we miss that, there's not another until late this evening, unless we get a taxi to York, maybe. That's a much bigger station. Maybe there will be more frequent service from there. Welcome to the middle of nowhere, Joe sighs. He presses a kiss to Nikki's shoulder, resting his forehead there for a long moment, then starts disentangling himself. All right, 40 minutes. I believe in us. Nikki misses his warmth immediately and sets his phone aside so that he can focus on Joe properly. Wait, no, I'm sorry. There's no rush. We can get the later train. As nice as 8 more hours of sleep would be, Joe says ruefully, and believe me, it would be very nice. I'd much rather be home sooner rather than later, you know? I suppose, Nikki murmurs. He catches at Joe's arm, lightly running his hand down along it until he can curl his fingers around Joe's. Though here has its perks, too. Joe's eyes soften. Unexpectedly so, yes. He ducks in to kiss Nikki's cheek right at the corner of his mouth. Happy Christmas, by the way. Nikki presses his fingertips to Joe's jaw, tilting his face for a proper kiss. Joe leans into it, and by the time they break apart, they're both breathing a bit harder. The drafty room doesn't feel quite so chilly anymore. Much better than how I'd planned to spend it, honestly. You mean playing Quinn's fake boyfriend in front of her entire extended family? I'm touched. Joe kisses him again, firmly but all too briefly. Seriously, though, while this trip has turned out a lot better than I ever would have expected, we should really get a move on. I want to go home, Nikki. With me? Nikki doesn't let himself ask. That's too much, too soon, surely. And neither of them are awake enough to have that conversation right now. So he lets Joe pull away. He gives Joe first turn with the tiny shower in the ensuite while he sorts out the clothing they'd strewn across the floor, then takes as quick a shower as he can manage. The water is on the hotter side of lukewarm, but feels like it's just barely holding on to it, and he doesn't want to push his luck against potentially Victorian-era plumbing. There's something melancholy about washing away the traces of Joe from his skin. He refuses to linger on it. They've likely missed out on a proper breakfast, but decide to swing by the dining room on their way out, just in case there are any leftovers worth grabbing. Nikki's headache is settling into the base of his skull, low and sickly. And he doesn't really want food right now, but he knows it would probably help. Instead of breakfast, though, they find a man who is presumably the proprietor of this inn, making out furiously with Lycan in the doorway to the dining room. He is indeed very fit, Nikki notices, in a stocky, pasty, British sort of way. Mostly he notices all the color draining from Joe's face at the sight of them, and the way his shoulders hunch forward defensively. Something in Nikki's heart splinters a little bit, both at the obvious hurt in Joe's expression and what that might mean for anything to do with Nikki. He shoves that thought aside. This is not about him, not right now. Hey, he says softly, catching Joe's arm. Let's just go, okay? We can get something at the station instead. Joe shakes his head, but his gaze refocuses on Nikki's face. And something in his posture does ease a little. Yeah, thanks. They leave the key behind on the unattended front desk and step back out into the snow. By day, the snow transforms the little town into something beautiful, like a perfect picture on a holiday card. Nikki wishes he could appreciate it more. Instead, the bright sunlight reflecting against the white, white snow just sharpens his headache. He does his best to shake the feeling off, to limited success. Their walk back to the train station is quiet. Nikki wants to reach out to take Joe's hand, but something holds him back. He's not sure it would be welcome and can't stomach the possibility of Joe flinching away from his touch. Not now. He feels weirdly fragile at the moment, in a way he's not accustomed to. It's not a pleasant sensation. At least the sidewalks have been cleared, which makes walking much easier, and they make it with a good 10 minutes to spare. The little station is filled to the brim again, likely with many of the same stranded passengers from Nikki's train yesterday, all impatient to get wherever they'd been headed for Christmas. The incessant holiday music playing over the speakers is more grating than it should be. Nikki does his best to ignore it. There's a generic coffee shop in the station, and they grab overpriced croissants and hot drinks. Joe gets some kind of ridiculous coffee concoction, which Nikki would absolutely be teasing him about any other time, but he's just not in the mood for clever banter. He orders herbal tea instead, hoping it will help with his dratted headache. The mild food does settle his stomach a bit. On the train, they manage to get seats together, but Joe pretty much immediately falls asleep against the window, using his coat as a makeshift pillow. Nikki spends more of the ride than he'd like to admit, just watching the play of sunlight across Joe's face. His mind keeps ruminating over the night they'd just spent together, replaying it from every possible angle over and over. Had he taken advantage of Joe somehow? They'd both been drinking, but not heavily. And from nights out clubbing together with their other friends, he knows Joe can hold his alcohol. Neither of them had even been approaching drunk last night. But he knows Joe is still reeling from his breakup, even if he and Lycan hadn't been serious. Even if they'd been in the off-again stage when it happened, was Nikki just a rebound for him? He certainly couldn't blame Joe, if so. It's a very normal thing to seek that sort of validation from someone else when you're hurting. Nikki's had more than one ill-advised hookup after a past relationship's ended himself, and honestly never regretted them. Sometimes that's just what you need in the moment, and that's okay. But it's like a door has opened in his heart that he'd long left closed, firmly shutting any nascent feelings for Joe away behind it, certain there was nowhere for them to go. And now they've all just spilled out messily, and he has to deal with them. He just plain likes Joe so very, very much. He has for as long as he can remember knowing him. It's absolutely appalling to him now that he still can't recall their first meeting. Surely, surely Joe would have left an impression on him, right from the start. He must have done. How could Nikki have ever just walked past him or had a casual chat with him in some class at some party, wherever the hell it had been, and taken no real notice of how warm and bright Joe's eyes are, how charmingly crooked his smile is, how his whole face lights up when he speaks, how attentive he can be, how he can look at Nikki like he's the only other person in the whole world sincerely interested in what he has to say. Unthinkable. Nikki wants to go back in time and smack his past self upside the head, take him by the shoulders and point him at Joe, tell him to look. Look at him. Right there. That's the one. Pay attention. It's a slow train ride, stopping at seemingly every single tiny village between Yorkshire and London. Eventually, Nikki forces himself to stop staring at Joe and retrieves his book out of his bag. He winds up having to reread every other page, not absorbing much of anything. A couple of hours in, Joe does wake back up again, and when he sees Nikki's book, he brightens and rummages around in his own backpack, only to pull out a different novel by the same author. That leads them into a pleasantly winding chat about literature and their takes on various film adaptations of books they've loved, and what the fuck was up with that awful recent version of Persuasion they'd both independently hate-watched. By then, the train is rolling through the outskirts of London, and they're almost home. When they step off the train into the usual mayhem of King's Cross, a grin breaks out across Joe's face, like the sunrise cresting over the horizon. Nikki finds himself just staring at him, utterly transfixed. Joe doesn't seem to notice. Alhamdulillah, it's good to be back. Nikki can't help but laugh. I don't think anyone has ever looked so happy to see King's Cross Station. Joe shrugs it off, still grinning. It's not here specifically, just... Fuck, I'm so glad to be in proper civilization again. You know, you're not really making a good case for how you aren't the pretentious Christmas-hating ex in the Hallmark movie. Fuck that shit, Joe says decisively. There's absolutely nothing wrong with small-town life, if that's your thing, but it's not for me. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I love living in big cities. I love the diversity and richness and ugliness and beauty of them. how there are a million jigsaw pieces thrown together that shouldn't fit but somehow work together anyway, and fucking gay bars, and mosques, and weird eclectic bookshops, and art galleries. Nikki wants to grab his face and kiss him hard and never let him go. You don't have to convince me, he says instead quietly. There's a reason I left my own hometown long, long ago and never looked back. Not because I don't still love it in my own way, but it wasn't home. Not anymore, Joe finishes. He has the oddest light in his eyes when he looks at Nikki, and Nikki doesn't dare try to put a name to it. They just stand there in the middle of the concourse looking at each other, not speaking. Eventually, Nikki has to clear his throat and look away. I should let you get home. Yeah, Joe says. He rubs the back of his neck. You too. Nikki swallows hard against the sudden panic clawing its way up his chest. It's all right. You don't have to. I mean, I'll see you around, yeah? No, wait, Nikki, can we? Joe reaches out an abortive gesture, then shoves his hands in his coat pockets. I had a really nice time with you, in spite of everything. It's exquisitely awkward. Nikki desperately hates everything about this conversation all at once. Yeah, me too. Joe, what are we doing here? Because I need you to know first what we are doing before we do anything else. Joe's eyes are very wide. Did you not want to? No, I did, Nikki says hastily. Very, very much so. Joe, I am so ridiculously into you. And if you just wanted a rebound or a distraction or whatever, that's fine. I'm glad I could be there for you when you needed someone, truly. But I can't be that again. Not for you. Not if that's all you're looking for right now. He takes a deep breath, forcing himself to meet Joe's eyes. Because all those romantic things you said Lycan didn't want with you, and you wished he had. I want that. In general, for myself someday, sure, but also with you. Specifically. Just you. I want that so, so much. Nikki. Joe's mouth opens and closes again, like he has something to say but can't put the words to it, or thought better of it, maybe. Nikki's heart, which already lands somewhere in the general region of his stomach, sinks a little further. It's okay, he says. If you don't want that at all, or with me, or don't know what you want right now. I'm so sorry. I know you're still reeling from everything that happened with Lycan. I'm not trying to give you some kind of bullshit ultimatum. He offers Joe a tentative smile, though Joe still just looks stricken. If you want to just stay friends, I'll never mention any of this again, I promise. But that's where I am. So I think I should probably go home now, and so should you. And then maybe we can talk later. Whenever you're ready, it's up to you. Joe's throat bobs as he swallows. His eyes are suspiciously bright. Nikki, fuck. I had no idea you felt that way. Nikki shrugs, clutching at the strap of his bag with white knuckles. He feels exhausted all at once, like he's just run a marathon or something. Me neither, I don't think. Until I did. I'll talk to you later, okay? Okay, Joe echoes, looking lost. Nikki hesitates, then leans in to kiss his cheek, lingering as long as he dares. When he pulls back, Joe's eyes have slipped close. He blinks them back open, and Nikki gives him a small smile. And then he turns around and walks away. Joe doesn't run after him or call him back, so he keeps walking until he's on the tube and then somehow home in the empty flat he shares with Quinn, which maybe is just his now. He doesn't know. He doesn't know anything anymore. He He turns on whatever stupid Christmas movie is playing on Channel 4 and falls asleep right there on the couch and doesn't bother getting up again until the 26th. The next week passes somehow. He'd already taken the full week off work, so he has nothing in particular to fill his days until the new year. The snow in London had quickly turned to gray slush, but there's still a lovely dusting across the nearby park, and he wanders around outside for a while until he's numb enough to return to the flat. He cooks a stupid amount of food and portions it out into various Tupperwares for the rest of the week. He calls his mother, who he's still on speaking terms with, and they have a stilted but still mostly pleasant chat about his job and the family holiday and church gossip, carefully avoiding any hot-button issues like, oh, who he actually is as a person. He watches increasingly terrible holiday-themed movies. He goes out drinking with his friend Niall, who listens with amusement to the ridiculous saga of Quinn and Andy and does not mention Joe to her even once. He does give in to temptation and Facebook stalks Joe just the once, for maybe 20 minutes. Like Nikki, Joe isn't really active on that platform anymore, and Nikki gives up before he's scrolled back far enough to relive their university days. He tries to deduce their first meeting based on their mutual friends alone, but it's too long and varied a list, mostly people from uni that Nikki doesn't remember at all. Why is he even Facebook friends with any of these people? Quinn does call him once, and they have a long video chat. She's still planning to pay the next few months' rent on their flat while she and Andy figure out what they're doing next. So at least Nikki doesn't have to worry about that yet. She and Andy will be swinging through London in early January to sort some things out. He's looking forward to having his best friend back, however briefly. He doesn't mention Joe to her, either. New Year's Eve arrives, and Nikki has no plans whatsoever. Last year, he and Quinn had gone out clubbing together, and he rang in the new year snogging some attractive man he would never wind up seeing again. Tonight, he's really not in the mood for that sort of thing. He considers texting Niall, or maybe Booker, see what either of them are up to, but hasn't made up his mind yet when his phone chimes with an incoming text. It's from Joe. "Can I come over?" Nikki stares down at it for long minutes, his mind a perfect blank. Of course Joe has his number. They'd exchanged contact info back when Nikki first moved to London so that Joe could put him in touch with Quinn, and have been sporadic texters ever since. Scrolling up through their messaging history, Nikki can see that most of their texts have been about coordinating meetups or organizing Quinn's dinner parties, with the occasional longer exchange that's clearly the continuation of an offline conversation. It's odd to look back through these fragmented glimpses of their growing friendship over the past year and change. Nikki would never have imagined that they'd end up here, wherever here is. Before he has a chance to wrangle his scattered thoughts into some kind of reply, Joe sends another text. "Please, I'd really love to talk." Not letting himself overthink it further, Nikki sends back a quick, "Sure," and tosses his mobile aside, heart racing inexplicably. Then he looks down at himself, swears, and spends a solid 10 minutes standing in front of his dresser trying to figure out what to wear before settling on a clean pair of jeans and the sort of t-shirt he normally wears out clubbing with Quinn. 5 minutes later, he goes back for a sweater because it's fucking December, January almost, and the heating in his flat isn't that good. He wonders if he should run down to the shops for a bottle of wine or something. But no, that's how he and Joe got into this mess in the first place. Some conversations are probably better had sober, if that's where this is even going at all. Thankfully, the buzzer goes off before Nikki can work himself up any further. And then he's opening his front door and Joe is there, in that same nice wool coat that's much better suited to a moderately cold day in London than a snowstorm. He looks tired, the creases at the corners of his eyes more pronounced than usual, but the smile he offers Nikki is genuine. And he's wearing Nikki's scarf, wound snugly around his neck. Nikki's breath catches in his throat. Without quite realizing it, he reaches out to touch the fringes of the scarf, rubbing the soft fabric between his fingers. I'd forgotten that I'd lent this to you.
Yeah, Joe says softly. It's really warm. Sorry for accidentally on purpose stealing it.
No, no, it suits you. You should keep it.
Joe's smile fades, but the glow of it remains in the brightness of his eyes. He swallows hard, visibly, and covers Nikki's hand with his own. Only if I can keep you, too.
It's the sort of dialogue that would have Nikki checking things at his TV if it were in one of those dratted movies. But somehow Joe makes it work. Maybe it's the earnestness of his expression, or the particular cadence of his voice, or maybe it's just because it's Joe. Nikki could listen to him talk for hours. Any words will do.
His throat feels very dry.
Joe,
I mean it, Joe says, his clasp tightening on Nikki's hand. I want everything with you, too. Specifically you. I don't.
He shakes his head, cutting himself off with a strangled laugh.
Fuck. I had this whole speech prepared, and I'm not saying any of it right at all, but Nikki, you have to believe me. You're not a rebound or a convenience. You're wonderful. The way you just listen and pay attention, it's like you can look right through me. And for some damn reason, you actually seem to like what you see in me. Even when I'm literally just complaining about the fucking weather for 20 minutes straight.
In fairness, the weather really was shit, Nikki points out.
His voice comes out a little unsteadily, and he realizes that he's actually bracing himself on the doorframe. This doesn't quite feel real to him yet.
Joe laughs wetly. It really was, yeah. But that's the point. I want to complain about the weather to you every time it snows. And hear you tease me about it. And navigate train timetables together. And yeah, have truly stupid amounts of sex for as long as you'll have me. And look, maybe it's not the right time for it. But I'm not going to wait some fucking predetermined amount of weeks or months or whatever to make sure I've gotten over Lycan properly first. You're too goddamn important for that. Please, Nikki,
Nikki kisses him.
Because otherwise all this feeling coiled up in his chest will just burst out of him like a firework, and he has to contain it all somehow.
He kisses Joe and tugs him close and kisses him, and Joe wraps his arms around Nikki hard, kissing him, kissing him.
Come inside, Nikki finally says, breathing the words out against Joe's wonderfully warm lips, and we'll talk about it.
And they will, eventually. Once Nikki's had a chance to kiss him some more.
They only notice that midnight has come and gone with the sounds of rockets going off in the city outside. Joe laughs and claims the celebrations are all for them. And Nikki grins and drags him back down into his arms, feeling the reverberations of every firework fizzing along his skin.
And yeah, it's definitely the best way he's ever started a new year.
The end.